I live in Hebron, Indiana, which is just south of Valparaiso. And so I'm driving down this road, and it kind of, like, it's later in the evening, probably around between 5 and 6, so the sun is starting to go down, but there's still enough daylight. But regardless, I'm kind of driving through the shade, and I see a pretty large, dark shape in the middle of the road, which, again, out here is really common. Roadkill, you know, we get sizable deer, and in all honesty, I'm flying down the road. But when I see the shape, I stop, because lying in the middle of the road, there's enough space for me to drive around it, and I figure, well, this is probably a turkey vulture on the other side of this animal, and I'm between maybe 30 and 40 feet away from it at this point, come to just about a complete stop. Yeah, I see this head perk up on one side of it. It's not a dog, though, and it's not a deer's head. It seemed thicker to me than a deer's head. It had kind of a longer and broader hooked beak, something between maybe a dodo bird's head shape with a really dramatic hook on the end, more like a parrot. It turns, and it actually, I see its profile, but it actually turned away from me. But it kind of, it sits up on its two legs, spreads out its wings, and seriously, these wings were about as wide as the road I was driving on. So that's between 15 and 20 feet wide for a two-lane country road. And it flaps a couple times, barely lifts off the ground, but manages to, like, hop, glide, and it disappears in the trees. Disappears in the trees.
Thanks, Greg, for sending us your Thunderbird sighting that you saw on the way to work one day. If you're listening to this show and you've seen something you can't explain, record it on a voicemail and send it to us, blurrycreaturespodcast@gmail.com. This week, we're going to be talking to Leroy, one of Roger's friends. If you haven't listened to Roger's episode, it was a couple episodes ago called I Dug Up Giant Bones. You probably want to go listen to that episode first, because that kind of helps explain what's going on in this episode. And Roger told us about some of his friends who had similar experiences who live in the area. So we're going down the trail of what's going on up in Minnesota. And before this episode gets rolling, we interviewed Leroy, a friend of his. I think I always want to speak to the skeptics, because there's so many people on Reddit and other places who've been commenting about this episode with Roger. You know, they get frustrated. They feel like it's too out of the box. It's too left field. It's too weird. And I trust Roger 100%. I've had so many phone calls with him, and we've talked about all kinds of things. But you could hear a little bit of nervousness in Leroy's voice. And, you know, you come on a radio show, you're older, you're later in your years, and you're trying to explain what's going on. And I think the nervousness lends some credibility to the fact that, you know, it's harder for some of these older gentlemen who've been farming their whole lives to tell their stories. I don't think this is something that these guys want to get on podcasts. They're not young Bigfoot researchers who are hopped up and ready to go and create channels. We're talking landline phones, you know, having to call them and find them. So that's just all the backstory of Roger and his friends to help you understand that Luke and I are trying to piece together what's going on up there, and this might help you ease some of your skepticism that in some ways these guys are either a little nervous to tell their stories. And a lot of times it's so easy just to go, ah, man, you know, in the age of the internet, just be super skeptical. So listen to Leroy's story. You can hear it in his voice a little bit that this isn't easy to just dump out on the world. And let us know what you think. All right, welcome to the podcast, Leroy. We've been on the trail of this story in Minnesota. We uncovered a lot of weird stuff when we talked to Roger. Part of me feels like the initial reaction a lot of people have when they hear some of this out-of-the-box information is to think, man, you know, like, I don't know, it's just some guy's story up and, you know, they write it off like some crazy farmer. They say things to rationalize what they heard, right? So we thought we would chase this story down and hear some of the people connected in the same areas who are having similar activity. And Leroy, thanks for coming on the show first and foremost. You've had some Bigfoot activity on your property and some other unexplained things. Can you just kind of explain how you got to know Roger first and then kind of launch into some of the, when you started realizing some of the strange things were happening on your property?
Yeah, I have a friend of ours worked with Roger on the railroad. And then when Roger had his America Unearthed TV show, well, then he thought that, you know, both of us were interested in the same things, Viking type things. And so then I got in contact with him and he came up and I showed him like the earthworks that are around here. And then I went to his place and we've been back and forth a few times and trying to figure things out. Yeah. And then the Bigfoot thing too.
So you knew Roger, you kind of connected through the TV show and you guys started developing this friendship. What are the earthworks around your area, that you showed him? Are they on your property or are they just in the general area?
No, just the general area. Well, I live in what was, they call a short, well, the area where Lake Agassiz was, and there were, what I found was earthworks on the shorelines, and they're quite large. They're probably the largest earthworks in the United States, but they don't recognize them as that. Like the archaeologists, they just say that they're natural hills and or glacial erratics. But I've done enough research on them and to prove that they are, you know, astronomically aligned. And I'm pretty sure the group that was up here was the Aztecs. And it's kind of a complicated story, but there is evidence that the climate was beneficial for them to be here at the time they were here. And then when the climate changed, then they migrated south. And their history says that that's what they did.
And when you talk about Lake Agassiz, we kind of talked about this with Roger a little bit, Luke, where Lake Agassiz was kind of how the Seaway connected to the whole area up north, and it reached into many states, including like the edge of Minnesota all the way down.
Right, it was a giant lake that gave access to the sea. You know, we had the opportunity for the seafaring people to access what's now essentially inland areas or places that are connected or adjacent to the Great Lakes.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe before we hop into some advanced ideas of how the climate changed and everything. Can you talk about your story of how, I mean, were you just always into to ancient history, or did you start having activity on your property or near you? You said Roger's talking about thunderbirds being on your property, and he said you guys saw some orange bubbles of energy coming up out of the ground. I mean, there's some weird, interesting phenomenon going on. So yeah. can you kind of walk us through the timeline? Like, you know, how does all these events kind of lead up to it? And is that what kind of propels you to trying to look at things differently, like the ancient history and whatnot?
Okay. My first encounter with Bigfoot was like 1961. And our family went to Bemidji on a vacation, the only time we ever did. And, you know, that was where Paul Bunyan is on the beach there. And they had a museum, and we were in the museum. And they had I remember it was a wooden type freezer, and it had a window where you could look in, and there they had in that case was a boy Bigfoot. I didn't know, they didn't say Bigfoot, it was a boy. There weren't too many people that I remember in the museum, and one group, you know, the guy said, well, is this a fake? And the guy that was at the museum said, no, it was found in a river just this fall. Then I was, I don't know when, maybe Paul Harvey was on at noon, and I always listened to that, and he had a report that said that a boy Bigfoot had been stolen out of the museum in Bemidji. And when he said that, I thought, wow, I was, you know, we saw that display. And I remember my sister was maybe 4 years old, and I was probably 10, and she couldn't see up into there without being lifted. So I had to lift her, and she wanted to see it like maybe three times. And so I got a real good look at, you know, that boy Bigfoot. And then later I had, I can't remember if I'd heard these other stories of people around here. Before I had my sighting, I was going to put up no hunting signs. And so I drove across the bridge, and there between the woods and a pasture, there's an open field. And on the side of the pasture side, there was standing what I thought was a moose, you know, looking right at me. And it was as big as a moose, it was dark. By the time I grabbed my binoculars and looked up, it was walking. It was walking on 2 feet. And I watched it as it went across the field. You could get a pretty good look with the binoculars, and I could see it had a huge upper body, and you could see the muscles, you know, and moving. And when it got to the edge of the river, to the grass, and it made a kind of a right turn, so I could see the arm swing as it went, you know, to the edge. And then I think it must have just jumped down into the river. And then after that, I even said to myself, well, what did you just see? And I'm pretty sure, well, then I started talking to other people who had, you know, had experiences in the area.
How much time elapses between you said you were 10 years old, you're a boy, you see this Bigfoot at the museum, and then this sighting? What's the time frame?
Oh, yeah, it was maybe 15 years ago that I saw that. Oh, that crossing of the field.
So a long time between.
Yeah, long time. At the time, I didn't know much. We didn't have internet then, and had only a little bit of information about them and what they look like. And I talked to a guy who was he was about 10 years old, and he went, him and his brother, and that's about 40 miles from here. They live where there's, you know, big sloughs, and they were walking along the slough, and they saw something brown up ahead, and they just kept walking. And when they got close to it, it stood up, and when they saw it, you know, it screamed, and they both screamed, and they took off running for home, and it took off. He said they were close enough to see its face, you know, good. And he thinks that they were, or that it was, you know, digging for roots along the slough, and maybe getting food that way.
So question is like, you see this 40, 50 years later. Do you immediately go back to your thoughts as a boy looking in that?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just kind of funny when everybody's looking for this body, and here they already had it in Bemidji, but you know, somebody, maybe we were the only ones that had ever seen it, too, few of us.
Who do you think took it?
I don't know. I tried to research the story too, and it through Paul Harvey's stories, but I never did find it, or any newspaper story about that being in the museum. But that's quite a while back, so they probably didn't have anything on internet.
I find it fascinating, Leroy, is that like this is before the internet, right? So a lot of people will talk about Bigfoot and saying people are, because people know about this thing, or because there's such a, you know, a spread of information, and the access information is right at your fingertips, that people, you can manufacture experiences. But I mean, this is before all that. You're seeing something like out there, you know what you're seeing, and it harkens back to the, you know, you saw a, you know, one in a museum display, and I just find that super, super credible. So that is this what you kind of connected with Roger over? So you've had an experience, and he starts talking about all the stuff that happens on his property, correct?
First time I visited there, it seemed like within 5 minutes there were two tree knocks, and then they said to me, oh yeah, they figured out there's somebody new, you know, talking. So that was interesting.
When you looked at this Bigfoot in the cage, is this boy Bigfoot, could you see like his face, or was it just kind of really?
Yeah, it was his face. The window was, you know, just his upper, you know, head face. I can still picture what he looks like. My sister that I was holding up to see it, she can remember that too. And then one of my other sisters remembers.
Can you describe that for us, like what it looked like?
Yeah, it was definitely boy. You know, he had dark hair, not hair on his face, heavy features like nose and that, you know, and quite large, but still you could tell it was a boy, I mean, in what he looked like. You know, I believe the guy that said that they had found him frozen in the river. Yeah, it was just really interesting that, you know, I was able to see something like that. And
yeah. And we heard a story about this, Luke, about this principal who dressed up in a Bigfoot costume and then told the cops to come and shoot blanks and pretend that there was this big. So back in the day, all I'm saying is back in the day, people were had thicker skin back then. You don't think that people were, you think this was a real Bigfoot. You don't think they were made this thing.
The guy, I remember, didn't even use the word Bigfoot, just that it was a boy that they'd found. Cause I don't
like
remember
a feral
that.
Child or something.
Like yeah. Mowgli.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
that's kind of a weird experience. You know, you're 10 years old, you look in the glass and you see this thing. I mean, are you what are you thinking? Is it kind of rocking your worldview a little bit? Or are you kind of like scratching your head like what? What is this?
Yeah, you kind of wonder, well, what, you know, what type of being is that? I remember that kind of, you know, and didn't know much about Bigfoot back then. And I'm not sure when all the other evidence was starting to come out about him.
Yeah, 1967 is when the famous Bigfoot video Patterson. Was filmed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Patterson.
So this what year was this?
62.
In Bemidji.
It was around 61 or 62. And I'm thinking 62. And
this is a good 5 years before the infamous Bigfoot footage.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's
did what you see through the binoculars that day in the field, did it look similar to this creature you saw as a kid?
Well, I don't know. It was definitely a large male. My perception of it being a moose and the height rise, you know, didn't change as it was crossing the field. And then, you know, if it was a man, you'd never see the muscles on the back move because they'd have a shirt or a coverall on. Yeah, that was some of the things that I thought that made it
definitely legit, right? Yeah.
The arm swing was such an extended one, you know, like they do. And
what do you mean, like the length of it? Like it's just
well, they put their arm out quite a ways in front compared to what people do in their swing. It's a different arm swing when you're walking.
I mean, do you see that in the Patterson-Gimlin film? And that's what Patty's kind of doing in that film. She's kind of
Yeah. It's that same type of arm swing. Yeah, it's different than a human's. Yeah, I remember that part of it. I just thought maybe it was one that was passing through and stuff like that. But then later, I had my own close encounter with them, and now I feel that they're in the area.
Wait. So you have a. You have another encounter.
Yeah, it was maybe 5 years ago during deer hunting. I went across the river to a spot that I like to go to because it's open field and it's about 500 feet from the house. I walked over there the first day, you know, it was maybe 2.5 hours just standing there. And then there was a strange smell and I kind of looked around and then it got dark. I walked home and then the next day, I went to the same place, and it was a little bit, not as quite a long a time, but getting towards dark, all of a sudden, a rock was thrown in the water just down from where I was standing. And so I kind of put the two together, and I thought, oh, man, I got to look around and see if I can see anything. Well, I did that for a bit, and then I thought, oh, man, I should have a camera. I started walking, you know, back to the house. Instead of going across the log like I did the first times, I just went directly through the water. And when I came up out of the bank, or when I was crossing the river to I noticed that in the area where the stone was thrown, it's like a U-shaped river. Well, then the water was coming in waves. And I wonder what's waves doing like that? And I got up on top and then I looked to the east and there's a slope bank there where I saw the three going up. I looked for where they were, and they were about 80 feet away from where I had walked, and there, it was a depression, and there was trees falling on it, so they were, you know, sleeping in there, I guess. And when I went down into the river, they must have went in the opposite direction, and then the banks of the river were like 10 feet straight up, so that's why they followed the river to get to that area where they could go up it, up the slope bank. And then it was some time that went by. I guess it had snowed, and then the snow melted, and I thought I'd just walk the river. Well, then I found tracks where they had gone into the river, and it was right along the edge. There were three tracks. Like the one on the right was a left foot, and the one on the left was a right foot. So I knew there was, you know, three, and then a small one in between. And we cast them on a nice Sunday, warm. Then it gets funny because as we were casting the tracks, waiting for it to dry, my daughters had set up a camera, and it was because the sun was setting in the west. It was pointed, you know, in the direction where the casting was. We took our pictures, and in two of the pictures, you could see in the background the image of a Bigfoot, and it's a pretty good, you know, to me it is, you know, the, a correct and a true picture of one. I think what he did is he came and saw what we were doing as far as casting the tracks, and
he wanted his royalties, right? He's like, hey, you got to pay me some money for them, for them tracks. Those are my shoes.
Oh, I know. Yeah,
hey, and, is it possible for you to send us that photo? Because I know our listeners, yep, right now are, oh, awesome, awesome. We'd love to see that photo. And this is a rare thing, because most of the time people see this and they never get any evidence, and that's always the that's always the problem, right? It's just, oh, another story of seeing something in the woods and there's no proof, right?
Yeah.
What year was that when you got this photo?
It was like 7 years ago, maybe.
Okay. So this is your third encounter then? Or is that your fourth? No, it sounds like you saw it as a boy, then you saw it in the field, then you, yep, saw the three hunting, and then you were casting tracks a fourth time.
That's true. That was it. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. It is fourth. Then after, you know, we went and got the cast, the two big ones were really deep in the shale, so, you know, there's no, it's just that you can see it's like a human foot type, but the little one, you can tell it was barefoot. But the very night, I think that we were, you know, going to bed and shut the lights off, there was stuff hitting our house. They were throwing stuff at the house, and we were all still awake, and I think my wife even said, you know, I said, well, what's that? And she even said, sassy. And, and
so this encounter is this, sorry, just to try to get a visual, this encounter is right by your house.
Yeah. It's not very far. It's about where they were sleeping. It was about 400 feet from our house.
Okay.
So they were really comfortable with being close to us. Then they threw stuff at our house. I think it was four times, a couple times. It seemed like it was in the morning, and you could hear like something hit the roof and then roll down. And the first time it was on the west side, so I went out there to see what it was. I couldn't find anything. I thought maybe it was a stone. And then the second time it rolled on the east side, and we have our porch. Well, it was up on the porch, and I found a piece of ice that was deformed, like it had been held in a hand, you know, melted, but it's kind of deformed. And it seemed like after that, then that stopped. But I had
like a snowball. Is it like a snowball? Like when you form a snowball in your hand, you get this little, you know, it ices up, and
yeah, right. It could have been like that, or it could have been a actual piece of ice that kind of melted. Yeah, after that, then it kind of stopped, but. It shook me up because I knew that casting the tracks was what they probably didn't like that. And I wasn't going to report it at all then as far as the sighting. And I figured since then I've had other encounters at the same place in the river and the same place where I would be hunting. One time there was snow on the ground, and all of a sudden this something came falling down from the tree that was in front of me. And I saw it hit the ground, and it was tan, and I didn't know what it was. So I went and picked it up. Here was a mushroom that was flattened out, and I think they had thrown a mushroom towards me. And the mushroom was interesting because it wasn't frozen, and I would kind of have expected it to have been frozen. And that, at that time, too, I looked around and couldn't see any, you know, anybody that had thrown it. And
huh. Bigfoot throwing you mushrooms.
Yeah. And I did leave, you know, pretty shortly after that, too. I left the mushroom
there. This sounds like a Bob Dylan song that that didn't get released.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Just, yeah, mushrooms. Just kidding. Is that their food source?
Who knows? Some people think that people are eating mushrooms and then they see Bigfoot. That's the problem, you know.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah. So, man, you have all this Bigfoot activity. I just got to, you know, pop in here real quick. Like, you know, some of these people. I mean, you know, farmers. You know, Roger.
Yep.
And you know, they farm. These guys farm their whole life. They're out in the fields their whole life, and they never see these creatures. I mean, I'm sure you guys like you and Roger are just met with just walls of skepticism, where. You know, you try to tell your story and you try to, you know, recount this. And
yep.
Do people think you're crazy? What do they say? I mean, a lot of people have been writing us like, man, Roger's story is so out of the box. I don't know what to think.
Oh, okay.
And the reason we wanted to bring some of, you know, you guys on the show is because you've made friends. You've built a kinship between your experiences. Like, speak to the skeptics a little bit. And then what do you think these creatures are? What are your experiences trying to connect with people and share this truth?
Yeah, I've like told neighbor upriver. I showed him the picture and that, and then it was interesting. I was at his place, and he had these ponies, two ponies that he just bought, and there was one that it had braided from the one side of the mane, and then braided from the other in a V, and then, you know, tied up that way. And I said, oh, the Bigfoot like to do that. They love horses. And he said, oh, no, that's just the wind tangle. And we had a horse, too, that it came from the Bemidji area. And one time I saw her, and her mane was braided in the V, and then there was a stick going through the bottom. And I, you know, I asked my girls, did you guys do that? And well, then I found out from Roger, you know, that that's what they like to do. And this horse was probably really used to having, you know, Bigfoot come by. And I haven't seen it lately on the other horses that we have now.
But, so you still have horses then?
Yeah, we have a couple now.
Yeah, I mean, Roger kind of blew the wheels off of the story by Luke by saying that Bigfoot was coming in doing joyrides in the middle of the night.
Yeah, like riding the horses.
Yeah. Is that happening? Are they riding your horses too, or is that?
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure about that, but yeah, I saw the horse that had the braided mane with the tail, the tail hair that went almost to the ground. I saw that when I was at his place. So, but I think definitely that's a sign that you know, the Bigfoot has been visiting with the horse and. They like them, I guess. And
why do you think that is? What do you think about horses specifically?
Horses?
Is it like,
yeah, I don't know. I think the Bigfoot itself is a real mild, timid. Some of them are that way, and they're shy. They like to be out in the evenings. And
well, it's interesting about the horses. Like, I have an idea that, like, you know, I don't know if my knowledge is really limited, but a lot of, you know, when you ride a horse. First thing they tell you is the horse can sense your energy. So if you're afraid, if you're stiff, you know, you're going to have a problem. Like, the horse could kick you off. They don't like it. It's like you have to be and just kind of be very aware of your own energy when you're near the horse, or it'll kick you off or hurt you. Right. So,
yeah, they do. They do pick up on that. I think so.
Maybe they can communicate with the horses, Luke. I don't know. Maybe they can tell them what they want.
It's the animal world, man. It's possible.
We have it's interesting too with the cattle. You know, sometimes if you're out in the pasture and you kind of come up on them and they they're surprised by you. Like, I was kind of thinking that maybe they get visited by Bigfoot too, and they get surprised if they, you know, they're trying to think, are you a Bigfoot or?
Yeah.
You know, 'cause a lot of times they start running around like something special.
What else has happened? Like the you'd say that just the weird. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that happened on Roger's property that is a little bit out there, bizarro for a lot of people.
Yeah. I have land that's on one side of the woods, so I have to. You know, if I'm working over there, a lot of times at noon, I just walk through the woods. So it was a couple of years ago, and I was walking back and forth, and I'd maybe walk back and forth 10 times. And I was thinking as I did it, well, man, I'm coming out in the same spot, you know, on the north side. Well, then I finished my haying over there, but I had to go over and pick up a rake. And when I went over there, I saw that the spot where I came out of was completely blocked by trees. Like they'd pushed trees in on the on that very spot. You know, compared to the rest of the edge of the woods, that's the only spot that's like that. And I don't know if they're saying that they didn't like me going in and out like that or something.
Yeah. When you hear Roger's story, though, and he, like, his goes a little bit beyond that. It's like these things are...
Yeah,
talking to him and singing to him, and
yeah,
he's taking it to the next level, because we hear a lot of these other stories, Luke, and you know, it makes you scratch your head, but Roger takes the next level. Like, what do you think about some of that stuff? Like, is that hard for even you to believe, or is that like, oh yeah, that happens? Oh, like, where are you at it?
Yeah, no, I think yeah, that's, I can believe it, that if you know put enough energy into trying to get to know them. And like for us, we have dogs, so they don't like dogs. And it was at a time when we had this just an old dog that didn't go out much anymore, so that was when I think they were, you know, coming in closer to us. And I can believe, you know, the stories that he was telling about getting close to them. And
yeah, I mean, we, you know, a lot of people listen to our show have watched Finding Bigfoot, and it's like 10 seasons of that, right, where they go out and bang trees. And it's like, but then some of you guys are having, I mean, it sounds like you guys are having world-class interactions and sightings. There's people out there that go their whole life and try to have some of these experiences where not only are they seeing one, they're hanging out with them almost, friends, as Roger would say.
Yeah, he's really lucky.
Your story doesn't end there. I mean, Roger was saying you have these, this energy around the property, and then you have a bunch of Thunderbird sightings.
Oh, okay.
And is this all connected, all this phenomenon? Like, how come some, here's my question, how come some people seem to be like a magnet for this activity, and some people, like the Finding Bigfoot dudes, they go out and they just strike they just strike out over and over again? Is there something?
Yeah, Matt Moneymaker out here, just going to keep on knocking on trees and whooping.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Thunderbird part, it was a couple of years ago, and I was out doing chores, and I was out of the tractor, and I happened to look up, and there was this bird that flew pretty much over top of me, and it wasn't a bald eagle, and it wasn't brown, it was black, and it was, as it passed, there was a large tree that had that wide at the top. And so the branches, I kind of got a judgment on the width of its wings. And then a little later, there was a bald eagle that flew by that same branch. And then I could tell that bird was probably twice or more in wingspan than the bald eagle.
Wow.
And so then I kept, you know, my eyes out for them. And there was one time when I was kind of in a rush to take cattle to the market. I happened to look to the west, and about maybe an eighth of a mile away, there was one flying. And then I saw another one. And the first one was making noise. It was, you know, very loud to where I was at. And I wished I would have took my phone and recorded it, but I didn't even think of that until I was driving down the road. And it has a unique sound. It's not like any other, not like any other eagle that makes that sound. There were people in Park River that had heard the sound of a bird at night, and they recorded it. And then they went to an app that has bird sounds, and they couldn't match it. So it is kind of unique. And I've a lot of times I kind of hear that sound at a distance and then look, and it's way over a half a mile, and I can see the bird. So I think they're flying around here. And sometimes when I've seen them and tried to get the picture, and they just, this isn't enough time to get out of the, you know, out of a tractor and try to get a picture of them as they pass by. And yeah, and then with Bob, it was really interesting because we sent, my sister, I told her about him, and her daughter was outside and she took pictures of a couple. Then Roger or Bob said, well, if you have a picture of one, I can locate it. And he's able to locate them. And then he was excited about that. He came up here from, you know, southern Minnesota, and it was a summer day in, I think in August, and he brought in his map and his tools and his rods. I mean, and then at the table with the map and with two blank pieces of paper, he located where we should go to find him. And we went there, and we were looking around, and it was within about 15 minutes. We'd kind of decided to go to another area, but then as we were driving away, I looked out the window and there one was in the sky. And then we located it and watched it land. And our plan was, we saw the area where it landed, and we thought it landed in one of the shelter belts. And we went to the farthest one, and he pointed back to the other one. And then we went to the end of that one. He pointed directly in line with that. So I was going to walk in having, you know, the cameras. He was going to go on the road and watch. And I did see the bird as it took off, but it was on the other side of the trees that I was, you know, I was on the south side and it was on the north. And I should have just made my way to the other side to get pictures, but I was expecting it to come up into the air above the trees. And I never did get any picture, but Bob saw it, and he said it was big and moving fast. And then I asked him, did he get a picture? No, he didn't get a picture. He was, I don't know, too excited in watching it. But he was kind of far away, too. So,
Leroy, one of the things that we've heard about thunderbirds is that their appearance coincides with storms. Like they come in with storms or leave with storms. Are you seeing that? Or is this just like you're having clear days where these things are showing themselves?
Yeah, I think it's just clear days. I think the thunder part comes from their vocalizing, because, man, I was that eighth of a mile away, and it was loud where I was standing. That was impressive.
But it begs the question, like, what's going on in Minnesota that all this stuff seems to be happening?
Oh yeah,
you know, in your neighborhood. I use that loosely because I know that you guys live near to each other. Yeah. You and Roger and Bob, who we didn't have on today, but. What do you think about that? What do you think it is that it's attracting the level of activity that you guys are seeing? What is about that area? Do you have any ideas on that?
No, not really. I guess the number of deer we had, you know, we've had large populations of deer, but I guess in total of sightings, I've seen what I think is, you know, about 30 times for a thunderbird at distances. Sometimes it's close enough. If I had enough time, I would have gotten a good picture. But
it's amazing.
My wife had an encounter when she was working in a summer fallow field, and she looked to the other end, and she thought that this big rock had been pulled out. Then she recognized that it was a bird standing there. I asked her, you know, what if you're comparing it like to our dogs? We have these smaller border collie type dogs. Was it that big? Or she said, no, it was about the size of a German Shepherd.
Big bird.
Yeah. Later, I thought, well, when she saw that, we should have gotten casts of the tracks. You know, we didn't think far enough ahead to go find the site where he was at. I just thought it was interesting, too, in that shelter belt, I did see where the bird had landed and was probably resting. And it was quite a large area that the grass was, you know, matted down. Which, you know, points to it being a big bird.
Yeah.
A large bird.
Just to recap, you've got five or six Bigfoot encounters between woodnocks, sightings, Even took a photo of him. Saw him as a child, and even saw Bigfoot, young Bigfoot, Thunderbirds all around. And then yeah. Roger also described some energy. Bubbles coming out of the ground.
Yeah.
And it seems like these things are in clusters, or they're concentrated to certain areas. Is that part of the story too?
Well, this couple that I know, they have a cabin on the next river, and they were there this winter, early, like in December, and it was nice here. So they were there, and the sun had already gone down. It's like about 7 o'clock, and all of a sudden the grass to their northwest just started. It looked like it was on fire, and light, lots of light and white light, and they got pictures of that. And then there were these orbs that were floating around. They would appear and then disappear, and they were pretty excited. They sent me the email of the pictures and stuff, and yeah, we went there then after they, or I saw the pictures, and we went over there, and I used dowsing rods, and I had them with, and there were two of us doing it, and we were walking in the area where these lights first appeared and showed up. The rods were going in circles, and for both of us, and then sometimes the rods would stop and reverse, and very, I'd never seen that happen.
Interesting. And that's kind of something that Roger's episode sort of brought up to us, Luke, is like there's this invisible energy right under the ground, and it comes out, and maybe that's what's attracting Bigfoot, cryptids, giants. Are giants, ancient giants, maybe they originally migrated to these hot spots, right, where their energy was pooling underground or something, right? You think there's giants buried on your property too?
Oh, no, I don't think so, but I know the Aztecs, their origin, there were giants with them, and I'm not sure if there were giants here in, you know, when they were building their mounds in this area, but there could have been. The interesting part about the mounds, they found a disc right by it, and this etched disc, it has symbols on it, I think represent them already coming up with the 2012 alignment, like the Mayan had this 2012 prophecy of the galactic alignment. Well, on that stone are the symbols that represent that, and even one symbol that represents the tail of the Milky Way, as it, you know, they thought at that time that a dragon eating its tail was how they represented the Milky Way, and it does kind of have that look to it. It does have that open V-shaped area.
What are some sort of some concluding thoughts that you have about all the activity around your property and the Bigfoot creature? Like, what do you think Bigfoot is? Obviously, Bigfoot's more interesting than probably giant birds to a lot of people. They want to know what Bigfoot has. A lot of fans, and a lot of people love that creature. It's the most beloved creature. Yeah. Of all the ones out there, what do you think Bigfoot is? What are your thoughts? And you can, and there's no wrong answer, obviously. Just whatever you think.
I'm sure it's a creature that God created. It's a great ape, very intelligent, and most of them are very timid, and they do a real good job of being able to hide from people. I guess they're used to people too. To be used to people and still remain hidden from.
So you don't think there's any like weird theories of Roger described him as three parters, like a chimera. I think it's just pretty animal like.
Oh yeah, I don't think there isn't any of that. See, the fallen angels, the purpose of them leaving heaven and pretty much foregoing their chance at salvation, they came down in order to try to ruin the seed line that Jesus Christ would come through. And that was their purpose, but I don't think they could be messing with any animals. A flesh human has the similar body as an angelic being, except that it's a little different substance. And they were, like Israel was able to eat manna, which is angels' food. The angels could produce offspring too. And as far as the offspring, it wasn't part of God's creation. And that's why he had to get rid of it and tried, keeping the seed line that Jesus would come through, you know, Adam and all the way down, a pure seed line, from Adam.
Yeah, it had to be human DNA, right? Like the genealogy had to be pure.
Yeah, and it was, but it took some doing. The first group of angels, produced giants. Well, then those giants died in the flood of Noah. But then there was a second influx of that when Abraham, the covenant was made with Abraham. Then another group of fallen angels came down and produced offspring of the people that lived in that area, like the Phoenicians and the Canaanites. And God tried to keep Israel from intermarrying with those people and, keep it polluting the seed line.
Yeah, because we debated on our show a lot, Luke, about how do these things survive? How do they come back? The Raphaim, right. The risen ones. And it sounds
like... Is it one of Noah's wives, or is there a second incursion? And how do the Raphaim show up? So, yeah. A lot of theories about that. Also, a lot of theories about Bigfoot. So, we'd like to hear yours. We appreciate it, Leroy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah, I appreciate it. There's so many... There's so many rabbit holes here we could go down between ancient history to Bigfoot. And I think that part of what we were feeling, Luke, is there's a lot of, people that have seen some things over the years. I mean, there's a lot of people who, I don't know how to say this without, there's guys with some years under their belts who, in my opinion, don't have a lot of reason to go on a podcast and make up stories, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
Roger seems very, very credible, and I've talked to him so many times, and I'm just trying to get some of our listeners who think that there's people out there who are these farmers who've been farming their whole life, have any reason to come on a podcast and make up wild stories. And
yeah, no.
and when you guys start corroborating some of your stories, it helps people kind of go, man, maybe something's going on up there in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Oh, hitter.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few of the Bigfoot around too.
Yeah, it sounds like if you want to see Bigfoot, Luke, you got to go buy a horse.
Yeah, they like horses.
Yeah.
And get rid of your dog, right?
I guess so. Yeah. seems like the dogs, and then I don't know. Just spend the time to try to communicate with them, I guess, and help or play them music that helps draw them in that they like.
Yeah.
I guess they like Native American flute music is their favorite.
Oh, wow.
And that's an interesting one.
I don't play the flute.
No, it's not you. I got a buddy. My buddy Charles. He's a phenomenal flautist.
A flautist?
He's a Native American flautist, yeah. This is not a joke.
We're going to go out in the woods.
Shout out to Charles, yeah.
With Charles, Luke, and we're going to have to go up. We're going to have to come up there.
Yeah, we're going to see Leroy and... Roger,
huh?
You got to get up there and see what's going on.
Yeah, one of these days we're going to get up there. I've been talking to Roger. We're already kicking around the preliminary idea of coming up there and seeing some of this phenomenon. Is it possible for you to send us some of these photos? I know our listeners are going to want to see anything like this. You said your daughter took a picture of a Thunderbird, and then you got a snapshot of that Bigfoot. Man, it would be awesome to see this.
Okay, I will. Yeah.
Here's a picture of alleged Bigfoot and some Thunderbirds and such. Anything else you want to send us? Like, we're fascinated. Thank you so much for
coming on
Blurry Creatures and helping tell the stories of what goes on up there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting area in so many ways. It's just that, the chance of being able to see one, or you're really lucky.